You keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall.
You're my private dancer, dancer for money.
Do what you want me to do. I'm your
private dancer,
dancer for money.
8:03 on a Tuesday. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. I just want to quickly address one of these questions sent into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650 before we get to Thomas Drance of the Athletic Vancouver. This person has asked the question twice, so I did the research during the break. Who do you guys think will be the last player not to wear a visor in the NHL? That day is coming soon. So there's a list of approximately 20 guys, give or take, with taxi squads and call-ups and reassignments and everything. Vancouver has one. Jordy Benn is visorless. But there's a handful of guys that got it grandfathered in. I think the right answer will be Ryan O'Reilly, based on age, how long you expect him to play. He's 30. Zach Cassian is also 30 and doesn't wear a shield. No window for Cassian.
Mm-hmm.
But the days of visorless players, they're coming quick. Like, it's going to be within the next 5 to 10 years, easy. And I'm being pretty generous with that assessment. But I would imagine if I had to put money on
it.
So
how many players don't wear a visor now in the NHL?
Around 20. It depends on who's in and out of the lineup. Like, Andrew Shaw doesn't wear one, but he's been out of the lineup for a while. There's the old guard, right? Like Chara,
yeah.
Thornton, but they're on their last legs. The guys, there's no one under the age of 20 as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all guys. So the two youngest
ones. Well, you're not allowed to.
I suppose if you broke into the league as a teen and weren't wearing a visor and then had a grandfathered in, you might still be in your 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But right now it's two 30-year-old guys, I think. And probably Ryan O'Reilly will end up being last. It's like how Craig McTavish was the last one to not wear a helmet. Ryan O'Reilly would be
maybe
the last
he'll start wearing one,
though. Well, that's the other thing too, right? He could just
in his old age.
Yeah,
it's like it's been very irresponsible.
I brought this up because I think our next guest—he's always good at thinking on his toes and coming up with answers. It's Tom Strantz from the Athletic. Tom, how are you? First,
gentlemen, I'm glad you brought up Craig McTavish. I was very, very concerned that he would go without being mentioned. Congratulations, Dunbar Lumber is now rolling off your tongue. So clearly you guys are off to you're settling in to the new digs.
I say it very slowly.
Yeah.
Dunbar Lumber.
And then
I just tripped over it.
We're supposed to call them the smart alternative, and I keep calling them the smalt alternative.
Yeah.
It's like I've never read words before. It's very embarrassing.
We get paid money for this.
Yeah. It's written on a big whiteboard right in front of me, and I keep saying smalt, which isn't a word. Anyway,
it's like a Simpsons reference that Dom wouldn't get, but when they served the malk in the elementary school.
It's high in vitamin R. Let's focus here. This conversation we were having. I know you're good at this kind of stuff. I know you probably have the thought in your mind somewhere. Because we're asking, like, who will be the last guy to not wear a visor? There'll be one guy floating around there. I don't know if he'll stand out as much as McTavish did when he was the only guy not wearing a bucket. But there will be a guy out there at one point, and he'll be the last of a breed that did not wear a visor. I got Ryan O'Reilly, for what it's worth.
I think Ryan O'Reilly's the right call. Because doesn't Ryan O'Reilly feel too like he's going to have a late stage... Like Jason Spezza with the Leafs,
point,
he's going to have a late stage where he's like a fourth line left wing penalty killer and faceoff specialist, and plays sort of like three additional years when he's not a top end centerman. I feel like it's got to be O'Reilly. He's got sort of miles left to run in his career. He's going to evolve and play a different role because he's got that type of game. I think O'Reilly is the guy. And I don't think he's going to stand out the same way, but it is going to fundamentally change the game when you have no one, absolutely no one, without a visor. Just because with the way the rules work, like the biggest impact is the impact on fighting, right? Like the moment they made visors mandatory, it was, you know, a sort of a commitment to slowly remove fighting from the game.
And said you weren't allowed to take your helmet off.
Right.
Helmet off, right.
Because
exactly.
In junior, the early days of the Vancouver Giants, anyone who went to the Coliseum to watch those games with Robin Big Snake and names like that, their games would often start with a fight at center ice and the guys would throw their buckets off and
they would put it neatly in a pile, gloves, helmet.
And the linesman would be like, the linesman would be like, we've got lots of time to break this up, but I kind of want to see this. Right, we could easily break it up, but these guys want to fight, and we're going to let them. Those days are long gone now.
Now you have the NHL thing, right, where the linesmen jump in to break up fights, and the crowd boos, right? Mm-hmm. The crowd's like, come on, we want to see that. I think that's the biggest impact. The moment that came in, it was clear. We've seen that continue to trend in that direction. I haven't checked, but last year there was one guy who had double digits fights.
Right.
And it was Delorier with the Anaheim Ducks. There used to be a whole class of players who scored 10 mm-hmm. and fought 10 times.
Right.
Yeah.
You think about like Maltby. Maltby used to do that for Detroit. Mm-hmm. Like Maltby had multiple seasons where he'd score 10, fight 10 times, and win a Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. And since this millennium, only one player's done that. Like in the last 21 years, and it's Sean Thornton, who of course did it for the.
Who did he play for?
Boston Bruins.
I don't remember him.
You know what? Before we get into the Canucks stuff, I do want to. We just talked about the Blues. We just talked about O'Reilly, and there was obviously we like floating around the theory that the Canucks broke the Blues in the bubble, whatever's going on now. And I'm not sure what. I'm not sure how closely you paid attention to this, but their seventh consecutive loss last night. Like they are. Most likely not going to make the playoffs this season. And it's been a real disaster in a lot of different ways. How closely have you been paying attention to this? And two, what do you make of this team that has just fallen on really hard times, 2 years out from winning the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I'm shocked. They've had a ton of injuries, right? Is Tarasenko
yes,
back yet?
Tarasenko's back, but he's very ineffective.
Tarasenko
right
is
now.
Back. But still, I mean, that's a huge loss. You know, this Blues team needs... especially Tarasenko and Schwartz in the lineup, or they're kind of low on elite offensive talent. You know, we all saw what O'Reilly and Perron could do in the bubble. It's a tremendous partnership, like a tremendous line, but without that sort of high end finishing, I don't think they have their separators. I don't think Jordan Binnington is the goalie that he looked like on that one magical year in which they won the cup. And you can't understate the loss of Alex Pietrangelo. Plus some of the players that they had that you expected to maybe take a step forward in Pietrangelo's absence. And I'm thinking specifically about a longtime favorite of mine in Vince Dunn, mm-hmm. like those guys just haven't leveled up this year. And so you sort of get to a point where you're just not as dynamic offensively for the most part this season. You're not as good on the back end, and some of the players that you were hoping would push and improve and level up, guys like Sammy Blais, guys like Vince Dunn, I just haven't quite proven ready to take that step. Then you throw in the fact that your goaltending has not been maybe at the top end. It's tough. And in that division in particular, like out West, you know, you've seen a Colorado Avalanche team just ruthlessly upgrade themselves.
Yeah.
Same goes for the Golden Knights. It's pretty easy to get left behind when that's your competition. And I think that's basically what we've seen with the Blues. And then you throw in, of course, the fact that the Kings and the San Jose Sharks are both a lot better than anyone had any right to expect, frankly, than they have any right to be, based on how they've performed this season, too.
Salford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We're talking with Thomas Drantz. Drantz, sir, when are we going to see the Canucks next? I figure we should talk about the Canucks. What are you hearing? How long are they going to be in isolation? When could they maybe start practicing again? Forget games. I just have no idea how to estimate the timing of all this.
Yeah, well, I thought it was really interesting when you saw the NHL reschedule those Flames games, but not officially change the Canucks schedule to this point, right? So you've got, if you go to the Flames website right now, you'll see their game against the Oilers on Saturday is cross-referenced with a game against the Canucks, and it's denoted as an exhibition game, just because I don't think the NHL website can schedule two games for a team on the same day and not assume that it's like an exhibition doubleheader, right?
Split squad.
The Canucks, though, I don't think they're going to modify their schedule or even have certainty until Vancouver stops producing positives. Now, as it was first reported last night, and I've been able to confirm it, that the Canucks will have one additional player positive today. Realistically, that would put them down to five available players on their 23-man. That's ugly. That's a really ugly situation. And until you've got now, it is an ugly situation. There is some good news here in that if you've now tested negative five times since your last exposure to the outbreak, which would have been Wednesday, that should be a good sign that this is winding down, that we're not going to see a big number again. Not that there's a lot of players left to get to contract this, but you know, I do think this is at the tail end, and I do think once the Canucks have sort of produced no additional positives for a couple of days, that the NHL will begin to figure out exactly what that schedule looks like and exactly what the timelines look for the club returning. But you know, this is going to be a really tricky and, you know, honestly unfair situation in my view for a Canucks team, you know, trying to return, really no reason to do so in terms of the playoffs. And, you know, this illness does just take the wind out of you, right? Like it does take the wind out of you. Teams that have come back, whether it's Philly, who had seven players on the list, Dallas early in the season, we all know what happened with the Buffalo Sabres. Like they don't play well, right? They don't, it takes a long time for teams to get this, to get their legs back under them. After an outbreak this widespread, and we've never seen an outbreak as widespread as what the Canucks are enduring, or one that, you know, appears to be as rough on the players. So, you know, it's going to be a really difficult situation and probably put the team in an unfair spot overall as they, you know, when they do return. But I don't expect like a hard schedule update or any firm dates to come before the club has produced zero positives for a day or two.
One of the most frustrating things for Canuck fans over the last few years has been what we've called assets dying on the vine, unrestricted free agents walking away for nothing, even down to some maybe a defenseman like Ben Hutton who, you know, walks away for nothing because the Canucks don't want to qualify him. He becomes an unrestricted free agent and gone, and say what you will about Ben Hutton, but at one point he was a pretty highly regarded defenseman, at least in Vancouver. Is this pandemic going to mean more of that with Tanner Pearson, Brandon Sutter, Jordy Benn? All of these guys are pending unrestricted free agents. And I'm not sitting here saying that the Canucks could have got a first round pick or even a second round pick for some of these guys, but even a third round pick would be nice to get. And I don't know if the Canucks are going to be able to get them.
It's going to be really tricky. And it was going to be really tricky anyway. But now, and for obvious reasons, the focus of the entire club and of management in particular has been on topics like player health, right? And, you know, containing the outbreak and scheduling matters and coordinating with the NHL and local health authorities, as opposed to, you know, how do we maximize the value of Tanner Pearson on the trade market, right? Like the last week.
Totally understandable.
You know, totally understandable. Yep. I'm absolutely not at any point going to criticize management for it. But, you know, I do think is a team even going to trade for a guy who's on protocol at the moment as Sutter is, right? Like who's battling symptoms according to their father, Brent Sutter, right? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it, I don't know how that impacts trade value because we've never seen it before. You know, in Pearson and Ben's case, however, right, they've continued to produce negatives. One would assume that perhaps they still have value, and those were always going to be the easiest pieces for the Canucks to move anyway, considering their regard around the league and their salary numbers. So, you know, I'm not saying that we'll see no movement. I'm certainly not saying that. I think there's certainly those two pieces that appear to have been unaffected by this outbreak to this point anyway, and hopefully that continues, that they potentially could monetize. But again, I think it was going to be a really tricky deadline anyway, principally because deadline prices are often driven by not your four best teams in the league, but by the team that's like in ninth but hot and wants to sneak in, or the team that's in seventh but just had an injury and wants to shore up, you know, their second line or their second pair, to make sure you get those three playoff home dates in a full building for your owner, right?
And, yeah, and you maybe want if the you bidding
around,
wars.
You get six. Yeah, but where's the incentive, right, to sneak in? You know, for me, unless you're Tampa, Carolina, the Avalanche, the Golden Knights, or the Maple Leafs, like, why are you buying? You know, what's the business case? Mm-hmm. So when you have that few really motivated buyers in a marketplace, you create a buyer's buyer's market, and that depresses prices significantly, and that makes it really tough too for a seller like the Canucks. So we'll see where this goes, but I'm expecting the deadline to be very much an afterthought in this city, considering what the club has endured over the past week, and that's how it should be.
What do you think will happen? Let's say the Canucks aren't able to trade any of these pending UFAs, Sutter, Edler, we haven't mentioned, Jordy Benn. Which of those guys do you think could be back next season? Because I just wonder how they're going to have room to fit in Tanner Pearson, especially after signing Thatcher Demko to a contract that, if it wasn't 5 years, if it was only, you know, 2 or 3 years, could have been a lower cap hit, but they decided to buy some unrestricted free agent years. So that bumps up the cap hit a little bit.
Yeah.
And you might say, well, that's only $1 million, but that could be the difference between keeping or losing a guy like Tanner Pearson.
Well, absolutely. And things get really tight in a hurry in an $81.5 million flat cap with the way that this team's positioned. Now, you know, unless a few things shake loose, whether it's buyouts or trades for some of the inefficient money that the club has committed. But really, you're looking at about 25% of your cap being committed to Beagle, Roussel, Erickson, Luongo recapture, and Holtby next season. So that's, you know, a fourth line and a backup goaltender, right? And that's 20% of your cap space with Hughes and Pettersson still to sign. You know, once they get done, in addition to the Demko $5 million, you're really looking at, you know, not a ton of money, somewhere between $7 and $10 million to flesh out your roster. And that's with 14 one ways done. So that's, you know, nine bodies at $10 million. That's really tough to do when the only defenders that you'd have under contract, as I've laid it out, would be Hughes, Schmidt, and Myers, right? Like, that's, you have to basically rebuild your blue line, still upgrade your bottom six. You know, this team still needs a really good third line center and a really good top six. Like, that's all work that's, you know, going to be beyond what the club can accomplish in one off season. So,
and don't you want to stay nimble for the expansion draft?
It's essential. And that's why adding any mid round picks you can, you know, over the next 6 days matters too, right? And if they can do it, it would be a phenomenal, like a Houdini-esque escape, considering the circumstances, right? So, yeah, I mean, you definitely want to stay as nimble as you can for expansion, but this club's not going to be nimble this offseason anyway. The good thing is that the players you're going to be targeting in expansion don't take up a ton of cap space. And look, we'll sort of see where things go, you know, with like a player like Jay Beagle was put on LTI right before the pause, right before the club's outbreak. And I'm sort of curious to see where that one goes. The fact of the matter is that this team's in a really tough position hockey-wise, and, you know, it's just hard to sort of work up my usual lather about it when, you know, I've spent the last week really just texting in with everyone daily to make sure they're still negative and or if they're positive, just to see how they're doing day to day with, you know, varying responses. So it's just an odd moment, but you're right. In terms of the hockey position of the club, the deadline is going to be tricky. It's going to be very, very hard to monetize anything, in my view. And that was true before, but now it's going to be virtually, you know, I don't want to say virtually impossible, but, you know, it's certainly, the deck is stacked against them. And that's going to be true again in the offseason, where the club is going to have very limited wiggle room and an awful lot to accomplish. It's really hard to get both better and cheaper, and that's the trick that's facing this club, and not just next offseason, but the season beyond that and the season beyond that. And that's all going to occur in a world, too, where Brock Besser is going to expire and then, you know, Horvat and Miller the year after. It sort of limits the runway for which this sort of core group, you know, the Canucks PP1 group anyway, will have to sort of have a big supporting cast around them while they're also still in their primes.
I know we're looking ahead here, and I know you've focused a lot on the Canucks' current situation, and your reporting has been really good on it too, by the way, just wanted to say that. But I am looking at the Canucks' cap situation now, and I'm wondering how they might be able to clear some cap space. Should we assume that Louis Erickson is going to be bought out this offseason? Do you think the ownership is going to allow buyouts. Yeah. I mean, if I was ownership, I'd be like, Louis Erickson doesn't even play. So let's save what we can from that cash perspective. But I'm also wondering about a guy like Antoine Roussel, or even Jake Virtanen at this point.
Yeah, well, the thing about a buyout is that it saves you money, right? Like, it saves you money because you only pay two-thirds of a player's salary, or in Virtanen's case, because of his age, one-third of a player's salary. That said, this organization, and this goes back to the best of times, like this goes back to right after the 2013 lockout, right? When teams still had two compliance windows, the all-timer is they put Keith Ballard on normal waivers the day before he hit unconditional waivers to be bought out with a compliance buyout. Like, there was this hope bet place where it was like, someone come claim Keith Ballard. He's got 3 years and $4.2 million left in a $70 million cap world, right? And it's just like, no one was ever going to claim Keith Ballard. Why did you even have to do that? Mm-hmm. But it speaks to ownership's overall reluctance, and this is at the best of times. Yeah. With a full building and a waiting list for season tickets.
Even the decision not to use a compliance buyout on Luongo. When the Flyers bought out, what was his name?
Bobrovsky.
Not Bobrovsky.
Brizgalov.
I was like, weird Russian goalie, talked about space a lot. Brizgalov, right.
Like, I know this. And then I said the wrong name.
Yeah.
Classic. Dunbar Lumber. I think buyouts are tough on this ownership group historically at the best of times. We know that they didn't use one or two, even though there were some really common sense ones. Like, straight up from a hockey perspective, there's no way that buying out both Berkey and Sutter didn't make sense this past off season, right? It would have opened up a ton of, like, that space is the difference between Virtanen and Toffoli in and of itself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, the hockey case was clear and bulletproof. And until the very last minute, I expected buyouts based on what I've been hearing. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. The Louis Erickson one, if you buy him out, he's got the signing bonus. So you get $2 million in cap relief for the next season if you buy him out after this season, with a $1 million hit coming the year after. Roussel is the most buyoutable because he's got zero signing bonus and a really low salary relative to his cap hit in the last year of his deal. That one seems straightforward. And then Jake Virtanen, because of his age, it's just a one-third payout. Like, his cap hit, if you buy him out, it's only $500K, which is why the Ducks' sort of reluctance to take on his second year never made sense to me. They, it seemed they insisted on viewing him as a $3.7 million salary liability for next season, when really it's a $500K plus, I think it's a $400K signing bonus. So really it's a $1 million salary liability. That part of it, I mean, those moves all make sense to me.
But they were probably expecting that they'd make that trade in order to keep him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose so. But the way to look at it is you're taking a flyer on a guy who can then be bought out affordably if he doesn't fit with your culture. I mean, that was the way to look at it. And that's the way to look at keeping him too, from a Canucks perspective, right? You get a couple more months to see if he can begin to put it together. Anyway, we'll sort of see.
Yeah. Maybe Jake will put it all together.
Maybe. I do think you need to, at this point, certainly be open to that possibility. I think in a cap system, you are going to make mistakes. Right. You're maybe not going to make as many mistakes as the Canucks have made over the last 7 years contractually. And I think that's absolutely must be said about a team that prior to this COVID shutdown had the most expensive taxi squad player in the NHL and the most expensive buried in the AHL contract in the NHL. Right. Like, they had both of those guys, and then a $4.2 million backup goalie, and then also Beagle and Roussel. So, I mean, yeah, you have to note that the Canucks have made more mistakes than basically any other NHL team. But you also do have to point out that if you don't arm your hockey people with every weapon available to them in the system, you're never going to win an efficiency contest. And that's sort of where the Canucks found themselves in this offseason. That's what the new NHL is. And, I think being able to at least consider and potentially execute a couple of buyouts this offseason would free up the Canucks to, you know, have some pretty interesting options, but not any really interesting options. It's just going to be too crunchy with the second contracts to work through for Pettersson and Hughes.
Drancer, great stuff today, bud. We don't know what the future has in store for the Canucks, but we know that we will be talking again to you next Tuesday.
Look forward to it, gentlemen. Cheers.
Hi, Reggie. 8:36 on a Tuesday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. We should do what we learned, and we've set aside some time to do them. Real quick, one thing that we learned yesterday, Sam Darnold, the third overall pick just 3 years ago at the 2018 NFL draft, gone out of New York. He's no longer a Jet. He's now a Carolina Panther. And then you also learned, Jason, that producer Dom is a Jets fan.
So you started liking the Jets when they... Was that when they went to a couple conference title games or earlier?
Right when they hired Rex Ryan.
Rex Ryan, Mark Sanchez.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the bravado, the braggadociousness.
They were a team.
You fell in love with the butt fumble?
That was after.
That was way later.
Yeah, they were fumbling by then. No pun intended.
They were a team on the grow those first 2 years. It looked like
they acquired LaDainian Tomlinson as well.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
It was really cool.
And then it all went pear-shaped because now they are. Yeah. Are they the worst franchise in the NFL right now?
Right now, probably.
Well, there's them in Jacksonville.
Yeah, but Jacksonville's about to acquire the Golden Boy.
Well, so are you.
Maybe.
What are your thoughts on BYU quarterback Zach Wilson? Broadway Zach, as you guys in New York call him.
Broadway Zach is, I don't know, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're skeptical.
I am. I really am. I thought they should take the second overall pick and trade that rather than trade Darnold and try and insulate Sam a little bit better.
You still believe in Sam?
Well, I mean, he's what, 23?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was taken in the 2018 draft.
Yeah.
It's remarkably – I mean, I understand sometimes you're like –
But you've got this prime opportunity right now to take potentially
Zach
a better
Wilson.
Quarterback.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah, potentially worse too.
Yeah.
Let's not forget.
Yeah, but you can't be scared of that.
I'm not, but when you have the second overall pick and Penei Sewell sitting right there, you can protect your quarterback and insulate him with targets.
And get an alignment. And I understand that. And you could actually put a better head coach.
Well, let's not get into Adam Gase.
Yeah,
I could go
We don't
on.
Have enough time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
But that's our precursor for what we learned. Let's do it now.
We're going to need a few things for this class.
Boring.
An eagerness to learn. A thirst for knowledge.
So, what did we learn in the last 24 hours?
When life gives you lemons, just say, F*** the lemons and bail.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
What we learned, still brought to you by nobody. You can change that, though. Actually, you can call in. This will be the only, we won't take the caller on the air. It would be a very awkward phone call if we were to. But if you feel like attaching your business or company's name to what we learned, 604-280-0650. Do you man that telephone?
Everyone who is in this office can.
So in addition to potentially being the namesake of what we learned, a proud and true tradition here on the Halford and Bruff Show, you also get to talk to Dom. What a win.
It's probably worth more than the actual sponsorship, I would say.
Dom's voice, the dulcet tones, you can hear it on the phone. Okay, let's do some What We Learned.
Alex in Port Moody, What We Learned, the Flames getting the band back together with Daryl Sutter is sounding like current Vince Neil trying to keep up with Motley Crue.
If they're going to truly get the band back together, they have to go Chicago Blackhawks style and bring in a bunch of the old Flames, right? I don't know how many are still kicking around, but... Like, this is what they were doing, is they were hearkening back to a Flames team that everyone loved and remembered. The issue is, and we've said this so many times, especially with the Blackhawks, it never works. You never want the band back together. It never sounds as good.
Yeah.
They just yell at you.
It doesn't, does it?
They just yell at you to play Freebird. It's like when we came back on the radio.
Yeah. It's been a disaster.
Not very good.
Absolute disaster. What we learned from Aaron, the Baylor Bears have a different type of athlete compared to Gonzaga.
Okay.
Those guys are freaks and play at a whole different intensity level.
I'm glad you read this one because this is a narrative that's going around and it's so wrong. Aaron, like, I respect the fact what you're trying to say here, but that's not it. Athletically, Gonzaga had just as many guys out there that could ball as Baylor did. Mm-hmm. Go look at the first round board in a lot of projected, mock, what have you, NBA drafts.
Yeah, there's three Gonzaga guys.
Jalen Suggs is widely regarded as maybe the best athlete in college basketball. Mm-hmm. He played for Gonzaga. Jay Ayayi. I'm always going to have problems with that one.
The French guy, just call him the French guy.
Jay Ayayi.
Yeah.
Is also projected to be a late first-round pick, early second-round pick. I don't know. I mean, Kispert had a lousy game last night, but he's also projected to be a first-round pick.
Do you know they're the favorites? They're the betting favorites to win next season, Gonzaga.
Yeah, I think.
And it's very tough to make odds right now because, first of all, you don't know how many guys they're going to lose to the draft, but also they could get some transfers in.
Right. And I don't think that they've locked up all the top recruits in the country yet. I was reading a couple articles where it says guys are still, because you can make late decisions now. Now, I'll say this. What happened last night with Baylor was they had a guy, I brought up that Mark Vital, the guy that they had, the big dude down low. College basketball, a guy that's 6'5" and 260 pounds can kill you. In the NBA.
But maybe that's what he's talking about, different type of athlete.
But that's what I'm saying. It's not. It's just that kind of guy can kill you. But if you go, if you ask an NBA guy, who would you rather take as an athlete?
You just heard a natural drather right there.
In its natural habitat. If you were to ask him who he'd prefer at the next level, no one's taking that guy. Because athletically, he's not going to stack up to what these other guys have. It's just that type of big bowling ball kind of guy can dominate in a college basketball game. It's just a different landscape and atmosphere.
My take on it was that just Baylor played really well.
Baylor was a better team.
Do you know what I mean? Baylor was a better team. It sounds like he's a professional hockey player type of analysis, but they came out and they played confidently and got Gonzaga completely off their game. Gonzaga didn't hit from behind the arc, and that's going to kill them. Baylor kept making shots. It was very impressive performance. And we likened to in a very Canadian way, very hockey-centric way, to Canada versus the Americans in the World Juniors. You know, you play that game over and over again, Canada's probably going to win most of them. But the Americans that day came out confidently, and they gained confidence as the game went on. And Gonzaga, or Canada, depending on the game you're talking about, lost theirs a little bit, and they fell out of their game plan a little bit. That's what happens with sports.
JB in Delta with the What We Learned, hashtag WWO, What We Learned. We learned that the Pacific Northwest is truly a cursed sporting market. You can throw Gonzaga in there now. That right now, that team and that program have changed from the darlings, the Cinderellas, about 20 years ago, to a national powerhouse currently. And after last night, that's now Mark Few's narrative. That's now Gonzaga's narrative. They can't win the big one.
Yeah.
Fair or not, they've been to two championship games in the last 4 years and lost both. And they've been knocking on the door. They're the next sort of high-profile program where people are going to be asking because Mark Few's been there for the entirety.
Isn't that funny?
It's how quick it changes, man.
Yeah.
With great success comes great expectations. And when they're not met, that's what, again.
I had a few people tweet at me last night, are they in the sad club now? I'm like, what? Gonzaga? It wasn't that long ago that they were just this Cinderella team. And that's why I said they're not in the sad club yet.
They haven't been around long enough.
I don't want to go too far. As a powerhouse.
I don't want to belabor this point, but there's three types of teams, really. There's teams that are happy to get to the tournament. Then there's teams that are happy to win some games at the tournament. Then there's teams that want to win the tournament. And Gonzaga's in that last category now. Whereas before, they used to be the other two. And that there are great expectations that come with that.
Dweeb with some good analysis here. What we learned, Gonzaga didn't have enough power drives, made famous by the Miami Heat's Jimmy Butler.
Dom doesn't know this reference. I'll explain it. So, Bruff became a big Jimmy Butler fan in the bubble, if I'm not mistaken. You really liked his plays.
Before then, I would say.
He took the Miami Heat to the NBA final.
Big time.
And then like your dad trying to explain programming the VCR.
Okay, you can tell it your version.
I said, what do you like so much about Jimmy Butler? He's like, oh, I really like his power drives.
No, I didn't say it like that. I said, did you see his power drive?
Sounds like a Tim the Toolman Taylor reference.
Well, you know what? I think you took it from Lee Carvallo's putting challenge.
I didn't. I took power it from the great basketball brain of Jason Brough.
Power drive.
And sometimes you need a player to just take the ball and say, all right, I'm coming on a power drive.
Yeah, I'm going to drive with power.
That's no.
It was a unique term. Like, you don't hear it very
because
often.
Because Dom is from the generation of just hit threes, right?
No, soft basketball. Not at all.
Soft basketball.
Not at all. I grew up as a center. That was
a back to the basket that center.
That's where my bread was buttered. Nice. You know?
Did it spread well?
It yeah. Spread.
We need to go to break now.
Alfred Brown. We do. Sportsnet. We read like two What We Learns.
We got one more segment to go.
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay.
Sportsnet 650. Hey, golfers. Yeah, you're listening.
I'm listening.
Get Great Vancouver Golf for less. Go to discountgolfcard.ca for all the details and to order your Vancouver discount golf card today. That website again, Jason, discountgolfcard.ca.
Read a couple more What We Learns while we got some time.
Yep.
We got like 2 minutes.
Hurry.
Corey the Carpenter. What We Learned, you guys need a fourth hour. Why do you want us to work harder?
Or more.
Yeah.
Not necessarily harder, just
yeah,
more.
Harder would imply difficulty.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it'd just work. It'd be more work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is weird now, like, the hours have shifted. You wouldn't think it's that big of a difference getting off at 9 o'clock in the morning or getting off at 10. Got to be a better way to say that.
Yeah.
And
I'm just tired for the rest of the day then.
Woo! I tell you, I'm out of juice.
Speaking of juice,
yeah,
Doug from Salmon Arm, what we learned, I learned that by next Monday, Kevin Bieksa will call Bruff an idiot. He came so close yesterday. First of all, Kevin Bieksa was just protecting himself mentally because he knows that if the Canucks had lost that fourth game to Chicago in 2011, that would have been considered one of the biggest collapses in hockey history. Mm-hmm. Who's right here? Bieksa or me?
I mean, it's like you guys. You come to the show every day and you just suck.
Okay, that was from the show before. He's also, quite insulting, isn't he? Now I know how Burroughs felt.
Yet accurate.
Yeah. No, I have we got that clip from yesterday, Dom?
Give me one sec.
He said you were ridiculous.
I wasn't being ridiculous. Don't you think that if the Canucks had lost that game, that would make, let's say, a top 10 list of biggest collapses or biggest chokes in NHL history?
Not if Kevin Bieksa was making
that,
the
but
list.
That would be on the list. He said they were the defending Stanley Cup champs. Yeah, but they lost a lot of players, and that's why they barely made the playoffs.
We have time to quickly play it, and then people can decide.
Do you feel that during the game, or is it after the game that you feel that? Like, I think about what you guys must have been feeling Game 7 against Chicago, where, you know, if you lose that game, that is one of the great collapses in NHL history. That
no,
you would
settle down. Settle down.
It would have been if you had lost up 3-0 on Chicago, President's Trophy winners, this team that was supposed to be the one in Vancouver's finally going to get it done. And then if you would have blown 4 straight to Chicago,
it was the defending Stanley Cup champion.
You're ridiculous. You're ridiculous.
Did we just lose, or did you just cut it there?
I cut it there.
Yeah. Okay.
There was no need to go on.
That was his
defense.
For him lambasting you.
Okay. What do you guys think? I mean, God forbid you have to have an opinion on this.
Were you team Jason or team
Bieksa?
Let's not get upset here, okay? You're upset at Bieksa. Don't project it on
I'm not
Dom
upset
and I.
at Bieksa.
You are. You guys are no longer best friends. It would have been a huge collapse.
Yeah. One of the greatest in NHL history?
But I also want Kevin Bieksa to like me, so. I can just agree with him.
That is so classic.
I just wanted to see Bruff's face. Where I'm like, oh no, I totally agree with you, but BX is way cooler than you are. Like,
Remember that goal you scored against the Sharks? It went off the stanchion. That was awesome.
That was awesome.
That was so cool.
Do you have a question for me?
Nope.
Not a one.
Isn't Bruff an idiot?
Sure is. Okay, we got to get out of here. It's Karen and Scotty next. Keep it right here all day. Your home of the Vancouver Canucks. Your home for everything sports in Vancouver. It's been Halford. It's been Bruff. It's been Sportsnet 650.